forgot to look. Ram and I grabbed our packs and followed him off the road to a rocky slope beside it and stood there with him craning up at the dark masses of the domes. They still blocked out half the sky. A rocky bank of detritus had washed down against them from the hills beyond. There, Ram pointed. Is that some kind of tunnel? The wall had the look of long eroded iron. We climbed to what he had seen, a narrow archway banked high with rubble. I saw no pathway through the weeds and dust that clogged it. The hoppers had seemed half alive, and the road still moved. But the domes hit me with a sense of death and desolation. "Let's get on," Ram said. "I've seen enough." But Derek clambered over the rocks and through the brush. He stood a moment peering through the archway, found his flashlight, and climbed inside. He was gone so long that Ram finally looked at his watch. "Give him another 30 minutes. If he doesn't get back, we'll have to go after him." But he came back at last, bleak-faced and breathing hard. "It's a fortress." Blinking at the sunlight, he wiped at his dust-grimed face and sat down on a rock to get his breath. "Most of it's underground. I followed a sort of gallery that runs all the way around the dome. There's a dark pit under it, so deep I couldn't see the bottom. I heard water running somewhere below and far echoes when I yelled. There's a weapon in the pit. My light didn't reach to show much, but it's enormous. A cannon or laser gun, or more likely something we never heard of. The domes are turrets. They fired through the ports we saw on the other side. The thing was built, I guess, to defend the road or guard the gate we came through, or maybe to launch missiles at the sister planet. I'd like to know." "Let's go on," Ram urged again. "I don't like the place. A dead place. Dead too long. Something makes my birthmark burn. Let's get out."
I know how you feel." Derek hunched his shoulders and sat where he was. "But the mystery of it gets me. The builders of the trilithons and the road were high-tech wizards, but their skills didn't save them. I've been wondering how they died. Maybe they got too good at the science of war."
He shrugged and opened his notebook. Back on the pavement, I felt relieved to be escaping the haunting spell of those dead machines. Derek stood with his camera, shooting the black domes as they fell behind. I saw Ram blinking at them, shaking his head and rubbing at the pale mark on his forehead. The hills ahead climbed higher. We came into a valley between them. An evergreen forest closed in upon us and gave way to a rocky gorge, and then a narrow cut with walls so high they hid the sun. Derek was standing with his camera, shooting the strata of white limestone and dark volcanic lavas that lined the walls.
"Get off!" Ram yelled. "Now!"
We were suddenly back in bright sunlight. The gorge had opened wider. Stony hill slopes rose beside us. The pavement was rushing us toward the lip of a vast abyss. I saw gray haze ahead and a mountain rim miles away. The road had reached an end. Chapter 7. We ran for the curb. I lost my balance on the slowing strips and staggered till Ram caught my arm and helped me off the road, only a few yards short of that sudden brink. Suddenly weak and gasping for my breath, I was trembling with the shock of acrophobia. High places had always turned me giddy. In my student years back on Earth, I'd once hiked down Bright Angel Trail to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, taken a swim in the river, and hiked back to the top, all in a single day. But that was long ago. The hazy gulf before us was not so wide, not so deep, but we had come too close. I shrank back and had to look away. We had come out on a flat shelf of something like concrete. It ran for a quarter mile along the canyon rim. Derek turned to look back. In spite of the break, the pavement still flowed toward us out of rocky hills that rose behind it, sparsely grown with tufts of brush and grass. He picked up a rock, tossed it to the red center stripe, and watched until it fell off the broken end. I heard it crash and rattle down the slope below.
"Magic engineering." He shook his head. "I wish I knew what keeps it moving."
"Magic, maybe," Ram shrugged. "But this pit was too wide for it."
He and Derek walked on to survey the canyon. I caught a deep breath and edged cautiously closer. It was grand enough.
Sheer cliffs dropped from the rim to shelf after shelf, to rubble slope after rubble slope. Streaks of white and rust and brown told the geologic history of the planet. The river was a thin silver ribbon winding through a narrow black-walled gorge, so far below that it turned me giddy again. Derek walked along the jagged lip closer than I dared. He leaned over it and found his pocket telescope to search the slopes below and the canyon's farther rim. "I can see the abutments on the far side." His voice was awed. "They're maybe 3 or 4 miles away, but it wasn't too wide for whoever built the bridge."
"Or tried to," Ram said. "If it fell before they got it finished."
"Well, I don't think it fell." Derek leaned again to scan the canyon floor. "I think it was pushed."
"Huh?"
"If it had simply fallen, we ought to see a lot of it left on the slopes. Most of it's gone. I do see a few sections scattered far up and down the canyon, blown there, I imagine, by some powerful explosion." He frowned and rubbed the stubble on his chin. "I think there was a war. I think that fortress failed to save the bridge." Ram turned to look back into the gap between hills behind us, the broken pavement still somehow moving toward us, his shoulders hunched as if from a chill.
"So you think the builders killed themselves?" he muttered. "You think this whole world's a graveyard, and we're trapped here to haunt it with no way home?"
"Trapped? We wouldn't go back, not yet, even if we could."
Ram stared at him.
"If something killed this world, I want to know what and why. If we can't go back, we've got to go on."
"How?" Ram gestured bleakly at the pit. "Call the chopper to lift us across?"
We'll do what we can," Derek shrugged. "Get across the canyon any way we can. Get back to the road on the other side. I want to know what it carried and where it went. We'll go wherever it takes us."
"To hell?" Ram made a sour grimace. "To hell my little mama somehow escaped? She never wanted to return."
I saw no way across. But Derek searched along the rim till he found a recent-looking rock slide. He said we had to try. Ram scowled at it doubtfully. The hazy pit below struck me with another wave of terror. "Here we are," Derek tried to cheer us. "We've got to play the game with the hands we hold." He'd spent half a summer climbing in the Colorado Rockies, he told us, with a student group. He checked our boots and the straps on our packs and led the way over the rim. I heard him whistling when he had breath to whistle, but the climb down became a nightmare for me. The rock slide had poured over a bench below with only emptiness beyond. I shrank back from it sick and sweating with dread, but I had to follow. We got off the slide and inched along the bench to a sloping ledge that Derek called a natural stair. An amateur geologist, he talked about the history of the planet when he let us stop to rest. His stare took us down along a wall of red sandstone, across a treacherous layer of shale, down again to a shelf of white limestone that he thought had formed on the floor of an ancient sea. He found his pocket lens to look for diatoms. "Nothing," he put the lens away. "No sign of early life evolving. All the life we've seen looks as if it came from Earth. It's another riddle I want to solve." Halfway down to the river, we found ourselves on a hazardous dead end with only giddy space below. We had to climb far back and take another way, and that took us to a slippery perch on what Derek said had been an ancient lava flow. I clung there while Derek tried a chimney that took him nowhere, returned, tried another way, and yet another, and we were trapped there till noon. I felt no wind. The sun was blinding, the heat suffocating. I dozed and jerked myself awake in dread of slipping off my narrow seat, dozed again, and longed for Eastern and our poker nights so far away and long ago. I felt grateful for the shadow of the other planet when it brought back a cooler night at noon. The sun was soon back, the heat stifling. All afternoon we followed Derek from one dizzy brink to another. We emptied our canteens and ate the last of the dried dates and the chocolate bar. The sun was gone before the final rubble slope took us down to a bamboo thicket on the canyon floor. We stumbled across a sandbar to the river and dropped on our faces to drink and drink again. The water was brown with silt, but we didn't mind the grit. We lay there, resting, till the chill of dusk drove us to look for shelter in a shallow cave. I slept at last, in spite of aching joints and hunger pangs, and woke longing for food. So did Ram.
"Remember our polka dinners," he sighed. "Remember Lupe's chalupas, her huevos rancheros and sopapillas comil."
As hungry as we were, Derek had found wild blackberries ripe in the brush on the rubble slope. We picked enough of them to ease the pangs and tried to take stock. The river had been a bright metal thread when we saw it from the rim. Close up, it ran so deep and fast I thought we could never get across. The canyon floor was nearly flat, but littered with enormous boulders fallen from above. The farther wall was black basalt, almost vertical. I saw no possible path to the top, but Derek seemed not to care. He photographed the canyon above us and below. He updated his notebook. He hiked along the shore to search for traces of the fallen bridge.
"I'm no engineer," he said, "but I want to know what held it up, what knocked it down. The canyon's far too wide for any single span, I can imagine. Yet there couldn't have been any piers. They'd have been impossibly tall. We saw no sign on top of any towers or cables that could have suspended it."
He scanned the rubble slopes again and shook his head. Stiff and aching from that long day on the canyon wall, I limped with him and Ram along the riverbank to search for clues. Ram picked up a scrap of bright metal.
"Stainless steel." Derek examined it and shook his head in disappointment. "But that impossible span was held up by something better."
"It had a sharp edge with one end broken to a point. Ram said it might do when we needed a knife." He put it in his pack and Derek pushed on to look for something better. We found what he said was an actual section of the fallen pavement. It was enormous, as long as a football field, half buried under great boulders that high water had brought down against it. Derek frowned and pulled out his pocket lens to study it. The exposed end was massively thick, jaggedly broken off. He found slender threads of silver, glass, and something ruby red, all embedded in a hard black matrix that he could not identify.
"Magic."
He shot photos and shook his head.
"Pure magic, till we learn enough to understand it."
Ram shook his head at the rushing river and craned to frown at the thin strip of sky above the sheer black basalt wall beyond it.
"First of all, we got to stay alive."
Chapter 8.
Ram kept us alive, with Stone Age skills learned from his work with Lupe. He cut a stalk of dead bamboo and split the end to hold the clovis point. He speared a dark-spotted trout and soon had half a dozen. He gathered thistle down, struck sparks with a flint, kindled dry twigs to make a fire. Feasting on broiled fish, I found a shred of Derek's optimism. Next day we found ripe fruit in a mango tree a few miles up the river. Ram speared more fish and dried them on sticks over a fire. He and Derek gathered driftwood and vines to make a raft big enough to float our packs and clothing. Swimming with it, we got to a rubble bank on the farther shore. The rubble had come down a side canyon. Filled with fallen boulders, it looked impossibly narrow and steep. But Ram twisted vines for a rope to hold us together, and we climbed for the rim. Thunder boomed before we reached it. The sky grew overcast. A sudden torrent came foaming down to meet us, boulders rolling in it. We had to climb out of the way and wait for it to subside. Dusk was falling before we clambered up the last slope to a stand of tall pines on the rim. Weak with fatigue, I stumbled away from it and turned to look back. The canyon was already a bottomless chasm of purple night, and a new wave of dread sent me reeling back. Derek was elated.
"Another hand played," he exulted. "Another pot won. Tomorrow we'll get another deal."
We crept into the pines to be out of the wind and piled fallen needles to make a sort of bed. With no cover over me, I shivered through the night. With the sun up, at last, we made a breakfast on mangoes and smoked fish and hiked back toward the road. Slopes were steep along the canyon rim, the forest dense. It took us all morning to reach what was left of the ancient roadway. Most of it buried under rocks and silt. It no longer moved.
yet it still ran perfectly level as well as perfectly straight. Deep cuts took it through hills and ridges. Dikes carried it across depressions. Floodwaters had run through the cuts, leaving only a few shattered scraps washed bare. We had to clamber over landslides that blocked the way, find paths through thickets of brush, climb over boulders and around tall pines. Smoked without salt, our fish went bad. We had to throw them out. We ate mangoes till they were gone. We tried oak acorns roasted in the embers. Ram found mushrooms he said were black morels, but only a few. Nothing gave us strength. An icy rain left us miserable. We came to a mountain wall with forbidding cliffs ahead. "The end of the road," Ram made a wry face. "We've found little mama's hell."
I felt ready to quit. But Derek discovered a tunnel mouth behind a screen of trees. Inside we found dry driftwood. Ram was able to kindle a fire, and grateful for shelter, we dried ourselves and slept beside it. Next morning I chewed a scrap of cold charcoal from our dead fire, which had a sweetish taste. With only our flashlights to show the way, we blundered down the tunnel through pools of standing water, and finally back into bright sunlight. Ram was tramping ahead as if he saw a way back to Portales. "People!" I heard him shout. "Live people!" Looking past him, I saw a friendly landscape of small green fields and wide pastures with neat hedgerows or low stone walls between them. A row of windmills swung their vanes on a distant ridge. Closer to us, white-painted cottages were scattered across the gently rolling hills. A spotted cow and yearling calf grazed the nearest pasture. A living man in the field beside it was riding a silent plow that cut a straight brown furrow through green turf. I saw no more of the road. "Peaches!" Ram shouted again. "Ripe peaches!" We ran down the slope into an orchard of ripening fruit. Bright red cherries tempted us from the trees. Apples still green. Golden peaches with their delicate fur. I could almost smell their aroma, taste their juicy sweetness. Ram tried to pick one and recoiled in dismay. "Crazy!" His voice shook. "Am I crazy?" I reached for a peach. My hand went through it. I tried again. The tree wasn't there. Ram walked into it, vanished, and appeared again on the other side. "Are we dead?" He was hoarse and shuddering. "Really trapped in hell?" "Listen!" Derek held up his hand. "What do you hear?" We listened. Birds were whirling around the cherries, but they made no cries. Leaves were trembling, but I heard no rustle of the wind. A dog in the road beyond was jerking its head at a bristling cat, but I heard no barking. "Dead men don't get this hungry." He grinned at Ram. "More likely, I think we've blundered into some kind of supercomputer simulation, a virtual world, one more relic of the technology that built the trilithons and that bridge." Ram asked, "What for?" "Education, maybe." Derek cupped his hand to his ear and shook his head again. "But without sound effects. Could be we need earphones." Beyond the orchard, a stone-curbed gravel path led toward a red-tiled cottage and a tall wooden barn. We walked through the walls into the barn. It was neatly kept, with hay in the loft and farm implements arrayed along one wall. A brown sow lay on her side, a dozen piglets scrambling to reach her teats. White hens ran free. I saw a rooster strut and crow, but still I heard no sound of anything, caught no scent of manure or moldering hay. "Nothing real," Ram muttered. "We're all in the same crazy dream." "Or a dream of ideal perfection." Derek nodded at the windmills on the ridge in a yellow-painted tank behind the barn. "It looks very simple, but it's all high-tech. Everything kind to the environment. Power from the wind, a digester to generate methane gas from the waste. A devil's dream." Ram's shoulders hunched against a wind I couldn't feel. "No wonder little mama ran away." We went onto the cottage beyond it. A big German shepherd lay asleep on the doormat. It did not wake, not even when Ram stepped over it. He pushed at the doorbell. His hand went into the wall.
and I followed him through the solid-seeming door. In the kitchen, we came on a scene that recalled my childhood in that old brown brick house back in Portales. A freckled boy in a blue school uniform sat at the table, frowning over a wooden puzzle, a bowl of uneaten cereal in front of him. A slender girl, a little older, was tying a red ribbon in her blonde ponytail. I thought she was beautiful, too fresh and lovely to be any kind of computer simulation. The white-aproned mother with her golden-tan skin and straight dark hair might have been a younger Lupe. She was filling two lunchboxes, one blue and one green. My mouth watering, I could almost taste the food she was packing. Two hard-boiled eggs, two fried chicken drumsticks, two brown biscuits, two red apples. The mother set the boxes on the table, scolding silently. The boy thrust the puzzle into his pocket and wolfed the cereal down. The girl undid the ribbon and tied it again. The mother kissed them both and gave them some soundless injunction, and we followed them to school. The silent dog went with us. The school was a neat single-story brick building with a green lawn in front and a paved playground behind. The children ran ahead to join friends on the playground. We walked through the front door into a silent hall crowded with happy-seeming students and smiling teachers. Two huge globes floated in the air over their heads. "The double planet!" Derek stopped to study them. "They must have had lessons on the dynamics of it when they were still alive. I wish I could listen in." The globes were rotating slowly. With nothing visible to move them or hold them off the floor. They looked Earth-like, with more blue ocean than land. Neither had an ice cap. I saw a tracery of colored lines that must have been roads, dots and circles for towns and cities, letter-like symbols that baffled me. "Writing," Ram pointed. "It looks like that script on Little Mama's Key." He sighed. "We need a dictionary for it." Derek waited to study one of them as it swung close to our heads and looked up at the other. "That's odd." He pointed to a bright silver thread between them. "A skywire?"
"What's that?"
"A cable way between the planets." "That's possible. They're locked in rotation, always facing each other. Takes a strong material, but back on Earth we already have carbon nanotubes 100 times as strong as steel."
"If they were all that smart," Ram squinted at the globes and shook his head, "how come they couldn't save themselves?"
"Eh, that's the question," Derek shrugged. "We're looking for the answer."
The more urgent question for Ram and me was how to find something to eat. In a world of nothing we could touch, nothing we could taste, we followed Derek through work tables and wall boards and busy kids that might have been in schools back in Portales. Nobody saw us. We went on to a village that almost might have been Middle America, except for the hieroglyphic street signs. In an open square at the center of it, farmers were offering ripe fruit and fresh vegetables. The smoke of meat grilling on a charcoal brazier looked so real, I had to turn away. Derek took a photo and Ram hurried us on. We left the village on a highway paved with gray concrete never meant to move, busy with trucks and odd-looking passenger vehicles that never veered to avoid us. It took us into a fair-sized city, its streets crowded with people who never saw us. Shop windows showed fashions strange to me. Our canteens were dry, but the loaves and cakes in a bake shop wet my mouth with saliva.
"Look at that."
Ram stopped us to point down a side street to an open square. A circle of tall megaliths surrounded a taller trilithon at the center. Banks of seats rose on either side, ready for the spectators to some event on a raised stage between the columns.
"Could it be," he whispered, "a way out?"
We followed him to it, walked through the trilithon together, found ourselves still in the same soundless shadow city. His hand went into the solid-looking stone when he pressed the emerald pendant against it.
"If all this is just a simulation," he shook his head at Derek, "why would they do it? What was it for?"
Derek frowned at the stage. "Well, if you want to guess, I think this whole place was meant for education. Social engineering meant to show people what they ought to be instead of what they were. Maybe meant to teach ways of peace?"
"Which fell flat," Ram muttered. "Flat as that bridge across the canyon." He shrank back from the trilithon. We're caught in a ghost world that somehow killed itself, with no way out. Oh, there's got to be a way. Thinking, Derek scratched at the new stubble on his jaw. That pavement ran straight, all the way we've come. If we had some sort of compass. We don't need a compass. Ram nodded down the street. I was born with a sense of direction. I never got lost, not back on Earth.
He pointed. If the road ran on, it went that way.
We followed the street until it became a highway that took us out of the city and through scattered country places on beyond them across grassy prairie where sheep and cattle grazed. I saw rugged mountain slopes ahead and wondered if the road had really climbed them. The sun grew hot. My tongue felt swollen thick and my mouth had a taste of bitter dust. Hunger gnawed at me. I felt weak and sometimes stumbled over something I never saw. Sometimes the simulation itself shimmered into unreality. Plodding after Ram, I fixed my eyes on the flint point of his bamboo spear and tried to think of nothing else. I felt glad when noon came in the cooler shadow of the eclipse. Carefully, Derek noted the time in his book. I wondered at his sanity here in the midst of madness. The sun returned, soon hidden by a dark cloud that rose in the west and rolled overhead. Lightning flashed around us, but we heard no thunder. Sudden raindrops struck us, but I felt no chill. Silent hailstones bounced around my feet. The rain ceased, but it had failed to cool the air. The sun came back, suddenly hot. Thirst was bitter dust in my throat, hunger and ache in my belly. Reeling with fatigue, I tripped over something on the road that I hadn't seen. I got my balance back, but Ram staggered forward and yelled in alarm in his native Swahili, "Angalia! Look out!" Falling face down on what looked like solid pavement, he disappeared through it. Derek and I were left standing alone.
Chapter 9.
Stunned and giddy, I staggered again. My stomach heaved. That untouchable world whirled around me. My faith in my own senses was gone. Ram! My voice was a rusty croak, but I called again, Ram! There was no answer. His spear lay near where he had vanished. The pavement around us was empty. Lightning still flickered in the storm cloud that had passed us, but I heard no thunder. What happened? Still giddily swaying for my balance, I blinked at Derek. Where is he? Calmer than I, he peered around us, shook his head, and picked up the spear. A virtual world? He began stabbing at the pavement. Cleverly done. I'd been wondering about the solid ground under us. Nothing else is real, but we haven't fallen through. He frowned at the hills ahead. I thought something had hazed them. You know what? He nodded at me. I think we're coming to the end of the simulation. I think Ram walked onto ground that wasn't there. He prodded at the pavement where Ram had fallen. The spear went through it. He stepped cautiously forward and his feet disappeared. Probing with the spear, he led our way down a rocky slope we couldn't see. I followed him gingerly. The sunlit pavement rose around me as if I were wading into water. He was ahead. I saw the pavement reach his waist, his shoulders, his ears. He was gone. A stab of panic stopped me. Trembling, a cold knot in my stomach, I looked back through the sunlight to another lightning flash in the thundercloud.
Will?
Derek's voice came from nowhere. Let's get on. I caught a deep breath and took another step. That sunlit world was gone, the sky darkly overcast. I saw a stretch of shattered pavement behind us, littered with broken rock. All around us lay lifeless ruin. Crumbled walls, stumps of dead trees, wrecked tanks and cannon, broken stone, deep crater pits. We had walked off the end of the pavement into the edge of a chasm many yards across. Ram sat on the slope below us, rubbing at a bruise on his shoulder.
"Hello," he grinned at us. "I was afraid you'd never show up."
The grin gone, he frowned at Derek.
"If this isn't little mama's hell, I think it's close enough to do."
Down at the bottom of the pit, I saw a tank-like war machine, black with rust and rolled on its side, one caterpillar track ripped off. A long gun jutted out of it, a jagged hole yawned where the turret had been.
Bones and skulls of men lay scattered about it, rusted helmets, wrinkled boots, fallen weapons half hidden in the mud. Derek climbed down to inspect it, picked up a wicked blade of some bright metal, and clambered back to us.
"Well," Ram grimaced at him, "what do you think?"
He turned to shoot another photo and stood a moment rubbing thoughtfully at his jaw.
"This was an interstellar civilization, on half a dozen planets scattered so far apart that their death is hard to understand. Warfare seems to have killed them. The trilithons must have been bottlenecks for armies and military hardware, but here's a theory. The people here knew about their danger in time to build the fortress we saw. They lost the war, but some of them survived long enough to attempt a recovery."
He gestured at the tank and the bones around it.
"This could be some kind of memorial built to hide a battlefield, a virtual display of the peaceful culture they remembered and hoped to rebuild. What you might call anti-war agitprop, all of it virtual."
"Could be." Ram shrugged and winced as if it hurt. "What I want is something real. Something like a rare sirloin with eggs over easy at the Roosevelt on 2nd Street. Remember?"
Virtual or real, the war-torn landscape looked to be the same in all directions. Hopelessly lost, I wondered if we would ever eat again. But Ram got back to his feet. With the bamboo spear for a cane, he limped ahead again, leading us around shell pits and on toward a wooded ridge with higher hills beyond. We came to a scrap of the ancient pavement. A sign on a post at the middle of it had hieroglyphs that must have read something like, "Dead End." However, it was not quite the end. We climbed over a rock pile beyond the sign and into another tunnel, paved with colored stripes like the road we had ridden from the trilithons. I saw no movement, but the walls were tiled with something that still shone with a soft gray glow. Ram insisted that he wasn't really hurt, but we were all tired. We lay down on the pavement and tried to sleep. Taking my turn on watch a few hours later, I saw that the wall was slowly sliding back around us. Derek woke, walked to keep with the wall, and estimated our speed at 2 miles an hour. He made a note in his little book and smiled into the light ahead.
"I wonder what comes next."
"I don't much care," Ram grumbled. "It won't be Earth."
The road accelerated. I was on watch near midnight when it brought us out of the tunnel into the cold gray glare of that enormous moon. Full, it lit a dead landscape of high sand dunes and wind-carved rocks. Moving faster now, the pavement ran straight on across it into what Ram said was the east. Miserable with thirst and hunger, I was still awake, lying flat on my back when the sun came up. I heard Ram's excited shout and sat up to see him jump off the road. I shook Derek to rouse him. We grabbed our packs and followed. He stood staring at a strange monument that towered out of the dunes.
"The rulers?" He stopped to take a photo. "Or maybe the gods?"
Two colossal human figures, male and female, sat facing the road on a throne the color of gold. They were nude, the male jet black. Ram might have been the model for it. The likeness seemed uncanny, even to the white birthmark on the black's forehead. The full-breasted female was marble white, except for her own birthmark, a black crown of worlds.
"Your own great-something grandparents!"
Derek grinned at Ram. "If that mark's really hereditary, you may be a prince destined for a throne of your own."
"A prince of hell?" Ram scowled at him. "I wish you'd never seen those rocks under the Sahara."
"Oh, don't say that. We could be the luckiest men that ever lived."
Ram shrugged with a dismal face.
"Look where we are."
Derek nodded at the pavement.
"On our own Silk Road. Old Marco Polo had a golden tablet stamped with a passport from Kublai Khan, but he had only East Asia to explore. We have your magic mark and your emerald key with unknown planets ahead."
"And all of them dead?"
"No matter.
Derek shrugged. Marco got back to write a book. With luck enough, we'll get back to do our own.
Not likely, Ram scowled at the Black Colossus. We've come too far from Earth, with no way back.
Your little mama found a way.
Derek grinned and clapped his shoulder.
She came from somewhere people were alive. And didn't she say that the road to heaven runs through hell?
So she did.
Ram shrugged and squinted at the dance of heat on the desert horizon. And you can call this hell.
I felt almost too giddy and faint to care, but Ram shouldered his sphere and led us on. The sun was larger and hotter, I thought, than the sun of Earth, but the daily eclipse brought a welcome shower. The sun came back to glisten on rain pools. We lay face down to suck mud-colored water out of the puddles. It was sweeter than wine, and we managed to fill our canteens. Before sunset, we were passing a waterhole with a little herd of impalas grazing toward it. They raised their heads to look at us and ran in sudden panic from a cheetah darting from a clump of brush. Most of them were fast enough, but it overtook a laggard calf.
"There's our dinner!"
Ram jumped off the road. We followed. The cheetah was lugging its kill toward the brush. Ram yelled and waved his spear. It dropped the calf and bared its fangs. He advanced on it. Derek and I yelled and looked for stones. It stood snarling till Derek threw a rock that hit it in the head. It finally left the calf and slunk back into the brush. We carried our prize back toward the road. Derek had hunted deer with his dad when he was a kid, and he knew how to dress the carcass. I looked for dry wood. Ram kindled a fire. We held chunks of meat on sticks to broil them and devoured them rare. They were wonderful. We slept there that night with one man up to keep the fire going and guard our kill. Next morning we had a splendid breakfast before we went, carrying a hind quarter of the calf wrapped in its hide. Flowing on as if it had never been broken, the road carried us on through into scrub vegetation and finally into more fertile grassland. After the eclipse, on the third day, we saw low brown hills ahead and a row of tall megaliths standing in a gap between them. Derek studied them with his pocket telescope.
"Trilithons," he said. "They look like the terminal group that put us on the road, but I see another canyon in the way."
Another vast pit opened ahead, but it was not a canyon. The pavement took us around the rim. It was enormous, 5 miles across, Derek guessed, and perhaps a mile deep. A spiral road wound down the walls of it to a blue lake at the bottom that shone like a mirror.
"An open pit mine," he searched it with the telescope. "Abandoned."
He passed the little instrument to Ram and then to me. I saw huge machines along the spiral metal-jawed excavators, tall cranes, heavy vehicles piled with ore. Nothing moved. Ram frowned at Derek.
"What were they mining?"
"I'd like to know."
Derek shrugged.
"Metals, I guess. It took a lot of something to build all they did."
Ram grunted and we let the road take us on. The megaliths ahead towered high and higher, great stone pillars capped with massive lintels.
"One more terminal."
Derek took back the telescope to study them again.
"Busy in its day, I count 13 trilithons."
The road slowed and stopped. It left us standing between two immense square columns of some dead black stone. The lintel 40 feet above framed it like a gate. The vast flat floor inside the circle shone white as new snow. Derek pointed across it.
"We saw the skywire," he whispered. "Here's the terminal."
In the center of the circle I saw a thick disc shape of some silver-bright metal. As large as a railway car, it had windows spaced around it and an oval doorway facing us. A bright cable that looked as thick as my arm rose from the top of it as far as I could see. Derek found his pocket telescope to follow it toward the zenith.
"Shall we take a sky ride?"
Derek grinned at Ram.
"Up to your little mama's heaven?"
"Heaven?"
Ram reached for the telescope and took a long time following the cable toward the long, thin blade of the sister planet. He shook his head, and I thought I saw him shudder.
"Will it be heaven, or a deeper circle of hell?"
Yet he shouldered his spear, and we walked together toward the foot of the cable. Chapter 10 The 13 tall black trilithons towered like prison walls around us, or more like the pillars of some strange temple, I thought, with the sky car for an altar at the center and the skywire a ladder to the other world above. Awe of it chilled me. Ahead of me, Ram stopped and looked back at Derek.
"What if it's another traffic control? Another killer planet like the first? Our smoke hoods are a long way behind."
"It's a chance we have to take," Derek grinned at him. "A run of the poker luck you always trusted."
"The only choice I see." Ram shrugged and led us on.
The sky car had seemed toy-like, seen against those immense black pillars, but it grew as we neared it. A low wall of some white stone surrounded it with a miniature trilithon framing a gateway. Derek fumbled for his camera and suddenly froze, staring ahead. Something lay in the gate. A pile of tiny cubes and disks and cylinders that shone like new silver, mixed with bits of glittering crystal and little black lumps. This stirred as we came near, clumping into a snake-like shape. The head of it rose and changed into a grotesque travesty of a human head, with two gleaming crystal disks for eyes.
"What the hell?" Ram blinked and shook his head at Derek. "Is this really hell, and this the metal devil, my little mama?"
He stopped when it spoke to him in a brittle, short-clip voice. "A greeting? A question?
A command?" Its tone told me nothing.
It moved again, the knobby head rising higher, arms sprouting from the body, the base of it dividing into legs and feet. Walking like a man, it stalked to block our way. Ram flinched back and raised his spear.
"Try your little mama's magic key," Derek called to him. "Maybe it's a ticket."
Ram fumbled under his shirt for the little emerald pendant and thrust it toward the monster. The crystal eyes flickered red. It barked at us. The strange head bent in a sort of bow. One gleaming arm waved us toward an oval door sliding open in the side of the sky car. A twin thing appeared there, turned those gleaming disks upon us, and beckoned us to enter. Ram shrank from it.
"It's a robot," Derek told him. "Could be a flight attendant."
"What sort of robot?" Ram clutched his spear. "It's an actual metal devil, like those that tortured my little mama."
"I think it's a multicellular robot," Derek said. "I saw an experiment at MIT. The units were relatively simple, but designed to work together. Complementing one another, they made a whole greater than its parts. Let's go aboard." Ram stepped back and gazed up the skywire.
"For a free ride to hell?"
But in a moment he shrugged and led us aboard. We came into a ring-shaped room with a circle of seats facing the windows. The robot quacked and waved us at the seats. The doorway shrank and closed. A gong pealed. I heard no sound of any mechanism, but the dark circle of trilithons fell away. We dropped into the sky. A wave of nausea hit me. The window was too large and too near. The floor under us was glass or something like glass. It filled me with fear, the dread of falling off my narrow perch into yawning space. Chilled with a sudden sweat, I had to shut my eyes. Gripping the arms of the seat, I tried to remember the adventures of Marco Polo or the syllabus for my seminar on Shakespeare's history plays. Anything except that awful abyss. Ram asked if I was sick. I could only swallow hard and shake my head. We were already high before I dared to open my eyes, so high that my panic fright was gone, though it had left me shaken.